Hello, everyone, and welcome to the webinar with I'm Sue Scavo, and this is Kezia Kamenetz, and we're talking about heeding the call of the feminine in dreams and finding voice. And we are Daughters of the Dream, and nice to have you here. And we are recording.
Yeah, really nice. Sorry, you can't see me.
No,
I'm just
I know.
A voice for the ether. But it's okay. We made it. It's happening.
We got this far.
Yes. Yeah, so we were kind of dealing with technical stuff. We didn't get to check in as much. But it was really fun doing this last time. I feel like something that came up, something we were talking about a lot, was voice and the feminine. Yeah, I don't know. Was there anything you had been thinking about since then?
You know, there's a lot I was thinking about. I've been thinking about, actually. I just came off a retreat up in Telluride that I did with my partner, Bill St. Cyr, and we talked a lot about voice there as well. It wasn't just women. It was a mixed group. And the heart of it wasn't about finding voice. It was, you know, really just going into the dream. But we talked a lot about voice, about how... about finding, and I think we talked about this a little bit last time here, about finding the soul voice. And you know, there's the part about finding voice where we talk about our story, or we understand our story, or we kind of work through our story by speaking it. And then there's also this other voice that I think it lives inside of all of us, about, you know, who we really are. The voice that kind of surprises us, you know, as a writer, when I sit down to write, I'll sit down with, oh, I'm going to write a poem about this, or I'm going to write, you know, a piece of maybe memoir or create a nonfiction about this, and then it ends up being about something else entirely, and it's often quite a surprise. So to me, that's like the other voice. Like, there's a voice that's waiting to have space to be heard, and it's not always, it can be a surprise what comes up. So I've been thinking about that the last week or two, about how things come up and it's not what we were expecting. So keys around, you know, especially from this week, and a lot of the people that we worked with were, you know, kind of playing with the idea of what is voice and how does it look and how does it feel inside of us, and, you know, and voice doesn't always mean speaking. It's about learning how to discern when not to speak sometimes, and giving yourself space to be in a quiet space within yourself, or just have the voice for yourself. So that's another level, that another part that we were talking about.
Yeah, I think kind of with that, like, there can be this mandate put on you to speak from the heart or speak what's true, and that can feel like a lot of pressure, because I think that there's something about that it's like the truth is something, has to be something really concrete, or really like doesn't have contradictions or something like that. And I was just thinking about how, like, I feel like what something that dreams show us over and over is all the complexities and ambiguities that are actually the truth, and how the truth is often in there. Like, it's not one thing, and it's not one thing all the time, and it's not static. You know, I think what's true is something that is really fluid and can be really contradictory, you know, and that the dreams are really always trying to bring us to a place of accepting that, because it is really, it's hard for the mind, I think, sometimes, but it also keeps us from speaking, because we're like waiting until we know something for sure. And it's like, maybe that day is never going to come, you know, like, maybe what's true is that there's a lot of complexities to it.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things I've been also kind of riffing off what you're saying here is that there's a way to be in the ambiguity, and also to find a place to be comfortable in that. Like, well, you know, what feels true to me right now may not be the same thing later today or tomorrow or in a year. And there's a way to hold that kind of fluidity, if you will, and also be in a place of certainty around voice, in a place of certainty of, like, I don't know everything, but I'm okay standing here not knowing everything and being open to, like, knowing that my voice is here. So sometimes it means holding both things. Like, I have a voice. Sometimes some of us don't even know that we have a voice, but yes, I have a voice, and maybe I don't even know what it is yet, or it's always changing, or there can be many things that can happen within that greater field. So for me, that's finding voice. You know, there is like the level of finding story, but it's also like finding that place where you can stand in sort of the unknowing of the voice and be in that unknowing without trying to label it or trying to like bring a certain kind of, this is my truth for now and for all time. Because I think you're right. I think it does create a lot of pressure. And as if we have to be landed at any given time, because I think it is hard to land. I think we change, we grow, our circumstances change. We're met with a lot of challenges. And where are we in all of that? And where is our voice? And how can we let our voice also be fluid? Feels like a very big part of what we're bringing to this, and how that's different for, you know, and how it is for women to bring their own sense of the feminine to that process.
Yeah, because I think, you know, they're in the stereotype, men sort of speak with the kind of confidence, like they know the truth for sure, or they're empowered to speak in that way, and we look towards people in authority to speak in that way, and we sort of gravitate almost to that kind of speaking, like, oh, they really know the truth for sure. But then at the same time, it can discount our reality, because the truth inside of us, which we aren't sure, and we're, you know, looking into this, and there's complexities to it, and there's depths to it that can get powered over if we feel like, okay, we have to land on something. So I just feel like, yeah, a big part of it to me is like making space and empowering ourselves to be unsure, you know, and to be confident in that contradictory place, to be confident in that place of, well, actually it's this and that right now. And that's the truth in this moment, you know, and I know that you want me to, you know, like I feel like in relationships or work, you know, there's pressure for us to, you know, but if that's not what feels right to you, then, you know, I think we need to make space for there to be complexities in our everyday lives and not feel like we always have to know things for sure or speak from, or that would be our true voice. And waiting for that day, I think, is what makes us static.
Right. Well, and it's static and it freezes us. And then it's like we can't, there's something about like not being, it inhibits the place of exploration. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's something about arrival that feels important here. Like, you know, I think there's something in our culture about arrival. There's something about this idea that we have to arrive at something. And so without having any place for spaciousness around, like, oh, I've arrived here for this moment. So, yeah. Like, what, you know, so to be in that place of certainty or confidence in the self and how it's fluid, I think is so key to what we're talking about and so key to what I feel the dreams want to bring to us as well. Like, how as we change and our paradigms change and how we are in relationship to ourselves and the world and our inner life, our inner journey, how when that changes, the tenor of our voice changes too. The place where we feel like we have to speak may change even. You know, I used to think that, like, it meant saying everything. You know, like, I have to say everything. I have to say everything to my husband, to my kids. And I really feel instead now the spaciousness of, you know, what is important for me to speak and what is important for me to hold? How can I be with what's moving through me that wants to be given voice And then how am I within me when there are things that are sort of without words? I mean, I think part of finding voice is also being with the parts of us that we cannot bring words to. I mean, I think a lot of writers succeed somewhat, but I think there is a way that there's also feelings and experiences that, you know, I know with a lot of, in my own experience and with a lot of the dreamers that I work with, I'll say, well, how is that for you? How is it to have this new paradigm? And they're all, but often people are like, well, I don't even know what to say. Like, I don't even have words for this. And to me, that's also part of finding our voice. It's finding our experience and finding how we let ourselves be in our experience and have confidence that we get to have our experience.
Yeah, no, I think that's such a big thing, and that was the other big thing I'd been thinking about from last time, because it just keeps coming up in so many different ways, where, you know, and I think it's something that's really shifting right now, and it's part of why there's so many more women's groups coming up and all these different things, but there's a lot in this society, in this world right now, that wants to take away the reality of your inner experience. And wants to say that what is going on inside and what you're feeling, you know, your individual experience of yourself in this moment is either just insignificant or a distraction or, you know, something to maybe think about for a second, but not really the focus of your life, you know, or not really, like, meant to be important. And I just think, like, there's just this huge energy wanting to rise up and to just give ourselves that space and that time to just feel the way that we feel, you know, and not be in a place of needing to judge it or think about it or analyze it or act on it or anything, but just to let ourselves be present with what is inside of us and really, you know, savor the majesty of that, the irregardless of you know, what the tone or the texture of that experience is, you know, like really separating from trying to put words to it and just savoring it just in and of itself. And I think that is such a big part of what dreams are wanting to bring us. You know, our dreams bring us these experiences of our inner life that help us understand what those experiences inside of us are. And they also bring us the ways that we turn away from that experience or want to deny it or avoid it or suppress it. And in that, we get to become and reclaim those aspects of ourselves. And through that process, as we reclaim it, I think we make a statement in the bigger world that it's significant. Because I think it's really easy to feel like this is just a luxury, you know, that it's not important or, you know, there's things to do in the world or responsibilities or whatever else that keep you from that engagement, and I think that's really what's cutting us off from a deeper sense of our own existence.
Right, right. You know, and I want to add that, like, and if we've had what we call trauma, or if we have something that makes it hard for us to stand in our own experience, like the process of, like, stepping into that place of unknowing, of our own confidence, that you know, we may be, you know, there's ways that we get blocked in that way, like, you know, for people who have, you know, issues around, well, for me, part of working with trauma is that we lose, often trauma means that part of it is that we lose choice, like we, if we have suffered sexual trauma, then we lose choice over our bodies, or physical abuse. If we are, you know, have like trauma, like around war or, you know, poverty, then we don't have choice around our circumstances. So, part of the process that the dreams take us through is also show us how do we get our choice back around our own experience, like you were saying, Kezia, and our own bodies, our own circumstances. Like, how do we get anchored back into ourselves so that we can begin to see where we do have choice and how we can kind of how to claim our experience, our way of being, our way of expressing ourselves, you know, no matter what our circumstances are, or as much as we can within our circumstances. You know, the dreams do, they'll show us how we get blocked. They'll show us stories we carry. And they'll show us, you know, why we're blocked, you know, why we carry these stories. You know, part of it is personal, our own personal work, and part of it is, I believe, this culture that we live in, how women, I think, is changing a lot, but there's still a lot of suppression of the feminine voice, I think, you know, of the feminine period, but also the feminine voice, even when it's coming through, you know, other genders besides female. So I feel the dreams help us to sort through all those threads so that we can begin to, like, step into the mystery of voice and what that is for each of us.
What do you think the feminine voice is? Like, what other aspects do you think it has?
I don't know. Why don't you ask that? You want to answer that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one thing we'd already spoken of is, like, that contradiction, and sort of like that savoring of contradictory things, and really bringing together opposites and sort of being in that middle place that sees both and sees the complexity and, you know, doesn't deny the suffering but also remembers the joy, you know, doesn't avoid the pain but, you know, also acknowledges the love, and really making room for both, I think, is a big part of it. I think that creativity is a part, and imagination is a part of it too. You know, thinking about, and dreams are obviously an aspect of that, but, like, you know, the dreams you have for your life, like vision, you know, that space that we can enter into, that energy of what could be, you know, and what is possible and what is outside of what we've just perceived, but taking what we've perceived and bringing it something out into something bigger or something more complex. And I think it's an energy of, like, full embrace, yeah, of the individual's experience, and not trying to manage it or predict it or analyze it or think about it, but really just trying to savor it completely for what it is, and let it just be what it is.
Right. You know, I think I would add that I think there's a lot of fire. We're going to do, you know, this retreat we're going to be doing in July is, we're, you know, part of what we're bringing is, like, the fire of the feminine. I think there's a lot of libido. I mean, sometimes, you know, there's a segregation of, like, men have us, like, all this libidinal energy, which is, you know, sexual too. But women, I think there is a ton of energy and fire and sexuality and sensuality in the feminine as well. I think that in the ability to hold of that creativity and the holding of the different realities of, you know, holding this and that, not this or that. I think there's also, I feel a lot of libido in that, a lot of possibility and creativity and excitement about, like, so holding the dichotomies or, you know, the different, all these different things creates this, like, can create a lot of, like, potential and putting things together, and can be very fiery and very, you know, procreative, very sensual, very out there. You know, I was thinking, you know, part of the feminine is, like, being able to hold all these things, like receiving and holding. And I think it's also, like, and then letting ourselves blossom from that, letting ourselves really kind of burst with all that energy. I think that is part of the feminine as well. That women do carry that. And I think the feminine, even when it's in the in men or other genders, I do feel that there is this feminine libido that is part of what we're talking about here. That's really, I think the stereotype is, like, well, you know, the phallic energy is the thing that's, like, you know, the sort of orgasmic energy. You know, to me, the feminine carries that as strongly, if not stronger. It's like, you know, a lot of, there's a, you know, a lot of fire, fiery energy. I think that's part of it too.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, it makes me think of you know, just the enormous task that women have and the feminine energy carries, of course, of being a mother and, like, the enormous amount of power and strength physically you have to go through that. I mean, just, like, the pushing of that and the whole, like, process of birth, you know, you have to, like, create this space inside of yourself and trust that you're going to be able to survive the transformation that your body has to go through to do that. And then to build up to this moment that, you know, is going to be the one of the most excruciating of your life, and nothing will ever be the same afterwards. And then you have to do it, you know, like that. And that's such a metaphor, of course, for all of, I think, the thing that a lot of women go through in when they have an idea or a project or a family or a relationship, you know, that process of, like, nurturing that space inside of yourself, trusting yourself, taking care of yourself, and then, like, going through, you know, that big release of energy that happens when the birth takes place. It's like, I mean, there's nothing like that, and it's like, you don't have to be a mother actually in real life to have that kind of experience. And that is, like, the feminine energy of, like, honoring yourself and the powers that you have and trusting to go through those thresholds that can be so painful and scary.
And you know, and sensual. I mean, I think
right.
I'm going to go back, like, you know, for those who have been through childbirth, it is an incredibly sensual and excruciating process, but it is incredibly, like, even the process of, like, carrying is a very sensual thing, and it's about making space. And so, you know, for those of us who haven't had kids, it's a great metaphor, because I think that being with our voice and being with our experience and being in the feminine means creating space so that something can create itself in a way. It's the way a woman's body, like, creates space so that this other being can grow themselves out of the raw material that they gather from our bodies in a way. And I feel like creativity is the same thing. It's about giving space and so that things can grow inside of us, so our voices can grow, our experiences can grow, and we can trust that. The dreams really, for me, show, like, the places where growth wants to happen, and you know, really show, like, if you can give spaciousness to this thing, then something miraculous can happen, like, just like in childbirth. Yeah, there's something about the spaciousness, even, like, the process of, like, the excruciating process of, like, you know, manifesting. Through the metaphor of, like, giving birth, I think as we manifest ourselves, it is excruciating. We do have to kind of move through things that scare us, move through pain that maybe we haven't felt. You know, I know that, I have gone through childbirth. I have a daughter who's 15, and, you know, I know that when I went through the process, there was a lot of, I had to use all the muscles in my body to go through it, and so a lot of things I held got released. A lot of the feelings I hadn't felt in a long time, a lot of realization. So it was a very sensual experience, not just physically and through the excruciating part of it, but also in the release of a lot of feelings and hormonal things that were happening. And I do feel that part of becoming and manifesting and discovering our voice and discovering the mystery of our voice and standing in that in our own experiences, it is a lot like that. It is about being, like, knowing that things are going to be released that will be unexpected. A friend of mine was using that word today. Like, the unexpected part of this process is that things are going to be opened up that we are, I think it's important to let ourselves be surprised by. I think our dreams are always unexpected. I think they want to open up to even more unexpected and exciting and terrifying and great possible transformation. Like, every dream carries that in it. Every dream carries the possibility of that transformation and another bit of voice that we can find, another experience that we can claim as our own.
And I think that it's a really common dream that people have to be pregnant. and that's something people ask about a lot. And I think it's like, you know, all the things we're talking about with that metaphor, I think that's all at play, you know, when those dreams come up. And you can see the, like, often when people have that dream, there's a lot of misgivings about the pregnancy, you know, and precisely because it's unexpected or it's not, you know, what you thought or you hadn't planned for it or, you know, all of these things. And I think that's exactly it, right? There's a lot of ambivalence or anxiety or fear, you know, all these things that can come up when the actual idea of going through that birthing process comes up. And those are all the ways that we turn away. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I feel like last time we were kind of speaking more about the external things that can go on that keep women's voices down. And this is more like looking at that internal place, you know, because, yes, all day we can speak of all the things and ways that society keeps women from speaking or wants to prevent women's voices from being heard. But then there's this huge force of resistance inside of us to allowing those things to happen. And if you have those kinds of dreams of being pregnant and feeling like you don't want the baby to be born or, you know, all the things, like, that's all part of that resistance inside of ourselves. And, of course, you know, like, why would somebody choose to have a child? You know, it is very mysterious, actually, that we put ourselves through it at all, and it's a big sign, I think, of our willingness to devote ourselves that we ever make that choice, because, of course, yeah, I mean, I really liked what you said about the mystery and that, like, we have no idea what the child is going to do or what that creative thing that you've done is going to do or even what our words are going to do. You know, we don't actually know the effects that we're going to have until we take those actions. And it's so easy to get stuck in the maybe, and hem and haw, not say what we need to say because of how we think it's going to affect things. And I think part of, like, expecting the mystery is, like, understanding and knowing, like, you don't have any idea of the effect you're going to have on the world. I mean, you were really the most ignorant one in some ways in trying to figure out what your effect is. And if you spend your life, you know, trying to analyze from the courtyard seats, like, you're going to be missing out because you don't see yourself very clearly when you're in that mindset. And I think women can really get stuck there, you know, And it's like, you don't know. I mean, you just don't know. You have no idea.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I think that, and I do feel that, like, one thing that happens for a lot of women is the voice of doubt that you're talking about. I think that we do get, I think women are more plagued with doubt in a more obvious way than men or other genders. I think there's a way that it's like, is this okay? I mean, I find myself saying that a lot, like, is it okay? Or, you know what I mean? I call it the verbal shrug, like, to say something and then to say something really kind of big for me to say and then say, but I don't know, or do you see what I'm saying, or does that make sense? You know, I think that's like the verbal shrug, that's the verbal doubt of just, it's not standing in my certainty or my confidence of, like, I said this thing, I don't even know if it's true or not, but I'm saying it and trying it on and being in the mystery of what it's like to say it without backing off of it, without saying the thing and then saying, see what I mean? Or what is it, you know,
Yeah, no, totally. And yeah, I feel like that's my catchphrase. Like, do you know what I mean? And it's like wanting to reach something in that person, like agreement or like just wanting that confirmation that what I'm saying is okay, you know, and that goes back to what we were talking about last time too, like, don't hurt anybody's feelings, don't make anyone feel bad, blah, blah, blah. And that's why, yeah, like I said, like, you don't know the effect your words have, but you do know they're very, very powerful. You know, like, right. The words that come into your heart to say and the way that you say them have enormous power. And yeah. Like, trust it, though. Like, really trust it, because it's not you. I mean, it's not even about you, you know, like, what all the effects are going to be and, like, what it is. Like, it's bigger than your individual person to speak from your heart. And that's, right. Like, the bigger trust.
Right. And that's, I think, something that we, a lot of people, you know, men, all genders, but women, I think, you know, I think there's a lot of ways that we kind of doubt that we don't get it. You know, I remember when I was studying formally with poetry, I remember I did this reading, one of my first readings, I read to, like, you know, an audience of like 100, and which was a big deal for me a long time ago. But I remember being really nervous, and one of my teachers said, you know, when you step in front of an audience and people have come to hear you or hear, you know, whatever is being presented, like, you don't know what's happening out there. You don't know who each of those people are out there. And, you know, she said this thing that has stuck with me. I mean, it's been 20 years now, or 15 years ago, she said this to me, that, you know, someone in the audience is, like, very life depends on what you read or what you say, and that you'll never know who that person is, and you will never know how you affected them. And, I, you know, I've carried that with me since then. It struck me as so true as me being because I've been that person in the audience who went to a reading and heard a poem that completely changed my, you know, rocked my world, or heard a speaker, or heard a song, or that completely changed me in ways that I can never express to the whoever was reading, or nor would I want to, because it was kind of my experience. But, you know, so there's something about trusting that it isn't just about a reading or a presentation that happens. It's who we are in our day-to-day life, like how we are in our relationships, like how we speak from our heart, how that has that ripple effect in ways that we will never know, with our friends, with our family, with our kids, with our, you know, partners, with our parents, if they're still around, with the person in the grocery store. You know, like, it doesn't really even matter where you are, but when we bring that kind of presence of our confidence and our speaking from our heart, or what, you know, this thing, this mystery that we're talking about around voice and having our own experience, it does. It changes the world in a profound way. And I think a lot of us don't know or trust that. We just think we're small, or we want to be small, or we're small inside ourselves, and we don't believe our own voices. And I think that's part of the challenge of finding our own fire. I keep coming back to the fire thing.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, like, yeah, people just waiting to figure it out. Like, once I know what my truth is, then I'll say it, you know, or once I'm sure that this is my path, then I'll walk it with confidence. And just knowing that whatever path you're on right now, like, that's where you are, and it's beautiful, and it's needed, you know, and it's all part of it. And that's part of holding the complexity of things, you know, like, wherever you are right now, it's time for you to, there's plenty of space for you to say what's true for you. And it's needed, because no one else is going to feel or speak that truth the way that you can. And we're all worse for it when we don't get to hear it from you. And of course, you're the one who suffers for it the most. So we've talked a lot. I don't know if anyone's said anything, or if there's any questions or dreams that have been coming up for people.
So no one's posted anything. So if you want to, if you have a dream you want to throw in, and we'll look at it with you, or if you have a question or a comment, you can post a little comment on in the chat box. And Kezia can't see, but I can, so I'll read them out loud. You know, maybe you've had a dream that talks about this. Or maybe you have a question. You can post away.
Yeah. It's interesting, I think, about relationships, too, like the way it plays out. Because it's not just about speaking in terms of, like you have some big truth to share in the world or career or something. Like, it's also very much so in that intimate space.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think there is, like, again, like, I think in relationship, there is a place of, you know, again, it's where do I speak and where do I hold back? Where do I hold things for myself? I mean, I think it's really important to be very aware that, you know, voice isn't just like saying everything. It's like being our own experience, and how do I bring that to my partner? How do I know when not to say the thing? Or when I hope he doesn't say the thing, or she doesn't say the same thing to me that maybe wouldn't be helpful in the moment. So again, it's like holding the complexity. I think is really big.
Yeah. Yeah, can you say more about that? Like, how do you make those kinds of distinctions or develop that ability to discern what to say?
It's a really good question. I mean, I think every relationship is different. You know, we've done a lot of couples work. I know you've done some couples work too, Keys. And, you know, I think every relationship is very unique to itself. And it can be, you know, primary relationship, you know, you with your lover. It can be also you with friendships or with family. So when I talk about relationship, you know, a lot of us have primary relationships, but, you know, a lot of us also have primary friendships and primary family relationships. So I, you know, this kind of covers all of that. That I think that, I mean, I think there are places. And I, you know, I've had this experience with my partner, and where, like, the saying of everything can kind of be used as a way to, like, dump things on. Like, I'm going to say everything, and I'm going to say everything that I've ever been mad about over the last 20 years or the last 3 years or whatever it is. I think that's not the same as speaking. I don't think it's the same thing as saying everything. I think we can use saying things to cover speaking, to cover up really, or to stay away from speaking from the heart. You know, so for example, like if I feel hurt by something that's happened between Bill and I, you know, if I say I feel hurt about this thing and then launch into like 20 stories about how it's happened in the past, I'm actually stepping away from the hurt. I'm actually making it about something that isn't the thing that just happened. But if I say, well, I feel hurt that I feel like you didn't hear me just right this moment, then it stays intimate to the moment right here and now. And maybe if I feel like I haven't been hurt by him in other ways, I can, once we kind of work that out, maybe I can open it up, or maybe I just keep it there. Like, I think it's something about, like, what's it like to hold things, and what's it like just to be really present with the thing that's happening right now? You know, and I think it is a process of learning to, again, every relationship is different. Some relationships, it's great to, like, say everything. I mean, some people have that thing, and they can say everything that's happened in the last 20 years, and it doesn't go down some old story road or doesn't bring up old hurts that, you know, don't really need to be brought up in that moment. Some people can do that, but I find that for a lot of people, it's like, can we stay with this one thing? Can we stay with, like, what's happening right here and be with this, the experience of this moment, before we bring in everything else? I think that, for me, that's part of it.
Okay.
Someone wrote something here. Hang on. From Mary Kay. Hi, Mary Kay. She wrote, many women have a voice when it comes to speaking for others, but speaking for our needs around being loved, etc., seems to be more difficult. I know this for me. How do the dreams speak to this? Teaching us to speak for our own needs.
Yeah, great question. Yeah, that's a really, really good point. I guess I just want to say one more thing about in relationship, was just that I think something that the dreams have really helped me with is, like, just the feeling in my body, because I feel like we get locked into fights, right? We say something, and we know exactly where it's going to go, and we've had that conversation 30 times, and we just, like, do it again, and we're just, like, in it, and it can feel so real. Like, no, this is really how I feel, and I always feel this way because it's real, you know, and it's, like, so hard to click out of that. But it is the place I feel like dreams have been the most helpful for me, because seeing myself in that place and feeling it outside of myself, like through a dream, like here I am saying those things. Like recently I had a dream that was like this, where my partner was paying like $70 to get his like 10-year-old shoes fixed. And I was like, no, why are you doing that? And like, that's exactly like how it is for me. Like, if I, that's just the kind of thing that I would be annoyed by in real life. But it's that the energy of it. And then, so now when I feel the energy coming on, I can like recognize it like, okay, you can speak right now and you can say what you think you need to say, but you know exactly where this is going. You know, and what would it be like to just hold that and really dig into this other side of just, like, loving him and knowing, like, he's in his own process and, you know, it's not really a place that I need to try to control.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think that, that's something that dreams can help us with so much. But with Mary Kay's bringing up, it's so big. You know, so many women, I think, get stuck in this sort of caretaker role or martyr role. You know, where it's our job to take care of everyone, and why isn't everyone praising us for it? You know, where's our reward?
and why isn't everybody listening to us? That's the other thing. You know, like why isn't everybody like, you know, like saying like, hey, I can see this. Why can't you see this? Why can't I help you see this? Or you know, or can't you see that this is what needs to happen? I mean, it can be a tricky place because it can even be true.
Yeah, definitely. You know? It's probably true, you know? It's probably true. And that has nothing to do with it, you know? It just, and the way you see that is you see that in yourself, right? Like, how many people have you been listening to when they come to you in that way of, hey, this is what you need to do because I think so, you know? And even when they're right, especially when they're right, you know, because we don't actually change by people telling us to change. We change by feeling like we want something to be different and modeling ourselves off of others and seeing how other people do it and feeling it for ourselves and then doing it our way. You know, just like children, you know, they don't really learn as much from what they say as by what we do. And so if you,
Well, what I was going to say is that, and I think the dreams will show us that. Like, you know, I've rarely seen a dream or had a dream. I mean, it happens on occasion, you know, 20 years of all the dreams I've seen, like rarely is there a dream where an archetype comes to a person or a figure comes to a person and says, this is what you need to do. Rarely is it like, hey, here's your issue and here's what it is and here's how you can find your voice. Rarely. I mean, I think, you know, I've been doing this work for myself, you know, for over 20 years, and I've been working with people for a long time, you know, like 15, 18, I don't know how long, a long time, but like, I don't think I've only seen that once or twice, because it's not how we learn.
And the point of that is just to say, like, if you feel like you're speaking for others or speaking to others or trying to help other people, and the frustration in that, it's like, to really be a model of the things that you want to see people doing, you know, and taking on that challenge and really wrestling with those things. Because, yes, it's very easy to see what others need. You know, we're very sensitive people. But it's not as easy to see the struggle that goes on, you know, for those people to reach those needs. And, you know, taking that look into yourself and seeing the struggle that you're in, and maybe the ways that you've avoided that struggle by trying to stand in for others.
Right. So, I mean, it's a great question. I think it is something that women do, and I think there is a way that we are good at it. A lot of women are good at it. I mean, men are good at it, too. Lots of people are good at it. But as women, like, you know, we're kind of trained up for it anyway. So I think that's changing, too. So it's like, well, how do we hold, I think it's part of going back to like holding the complexity, like how can we maybe have some insight and see what somebody else needs and then also, you know that sometimes we can't tell, like say it or help them to find that. Sometimes we have to be with the complexity of that, like, you know, and how that is in relationship with our beloveds in the world. You know, sometimes it's like, you know, I'm sure there's been moments when Bill has been like, she's not seeing this. And in the past when he would tell me, I'd be like, it would just, you know, of course, piss me off. And, you know, now he doesn't always say it until I say it. And then he'll be like, he'll say, like, you know, yeah, I was wondering about that. Or, or, you know, like, what's it like for you to, you know, to get that? Or, and I'll do that back with him. You know, I won't say, like, this is what you need to be doing, or, well, I'll just be like, huh, and I'll hold the complexity of, like, maybe that's true, maybe it's not, and I wonder how it's going to be worked through, you know, through his dream work. And it is about, like, it's something about, like, what you were saying earlier, but about holding the complexity. Like, how can we be with seeing what we see and being with our intuition and wanting to help others, because I think a lot of us are caring people, so we want to help. Like, how do we be with that and also hold the complexity of, like, what is ours to, what is ours to do and what is ours just to hold?
Right. Right. And really, like, what is, how can we just empower others and feel supportive of them on their journey and really respect the limits of our intuition as well, or the limits of what we can do as an, and that's why it is so important to bring that focus back to yourself, because the place where you are most empowered and have the most control and the most ability to fully manifest what you want to see is inside of your own self, you know, and I think that you will reap those benefits much more quickly than trying to hold water for other people. And that brings in, you know, a lot of the issues that women struggle with, I think, around comparison and other women and just, like, feeling like just all the different ways we judge ourselves and others on where they are in their journey and what we think about them. It's just, like, it's overwhelming, and it's easy to fall into, you know, it just feels like, I don't know, like a water puddle, like you're going to step into it every day or something. Like, it's always there, but it's just really understanding, and I think accepting your ignorance, you know, like, yeah, you do know a lot, and you feel a lot, and you don't know a lot, and you are mysterious even to yourself, and so it's good to stay grounded in your ignorance, I think, and be really humble in those places where you're feeling like you see something that maybe someone else doesn't see. Or, you know, it's like just being gracious and humble, I think, can help a lot.
Right, and then that's like holding the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and holding the mystery of the other at the same time as you're holding the mystery of yourself and the complexity of it all, like the complexity of, you know, what your intuition tells you, and also the complexity of, like, you know, when do I speak and when do I not? And, you know, it's a lot to hold, and it, I think it's very much part of what we're talking about here. It's a great question or comment. Thanks, Mary Kay.
Yeah. So we don't have too much more time.
We have 5 minutes.
Yeah. I guess I just wanted to say we still want some people to come to the retreat. It's going to be the summer, and I'm really excited. I feel like it's going to be really sweet and a small little group, and just really trying to focus on all of these things and see what we can do as a group, you know, to really...
Easy, we lost you. That's funny. Kezia, we cannot hear you speak, and she doesn't have chat. So I think what she was saying, this is so funny, we're having such the technical challenge. Yeah, I think what Kezia was saying is that, you know, what we're going to be doing at this retreat is really creating a space to step into that mystery, to find a way to support each other in the mystery of finding voice and finding the feminine in us. And what does that mean? Because, again, finding the feminine inside is very different for each person. I mean, and finding voice and the experience of that is very different for each person. So, you know, what we're going to be doing is creating a circle in which we can do that, in which we can, like, use our dreams and use community. And we're going to do some ceremony work, too, and initiation work, to step into what wants to be heard by us, how the dreams have something they want us to know and to experience, and how we can be with that and be with others. So it is going to be an incredible circle. We're really excited. I can hardly wait. It's going to be really great. And it is. It's not going to be a big group. We're keeping it small so that we can have, so everyone can have space to delve into this mystery. So I don't know if Keyes, if you can come back. I guess not. That's so funny. So I guess I'll go ahead and end the meeting. Thanks everyone for being here. Really appreciate your presence and being in the ongoing conversation and being with us as we kind of explore this in this way that we haven't done before. So it's been really, really sweet to be with you tonight. And we will see you again. And, you know, maybe we'll do another one, and maybe we'll keep this conversation going. So thanks, everyone, for being here. And we'll see you. I'm going to stop recording. Thanks, everyone.